On this week's episode of the Of Record podcast, the Pride Month marketing conundrum is discussed, and we break down the Ron DeSantis Twitter presidential launch.
Of Record is a podcast focused on the marketing and advertising industry from the perspective of industry expert Joe Clements. Joe Clements is a co-founder of Strategic Digital Services, a digital marketing firm based in Tallahassee, Florida, and founded in 2014.
I'm Joe Clements, and this is the podcast Of Record. Hey everybody, welcome back to another long-delayed episode of the Of Record podcast. I'm your host, Joe, with co-host Kirsten.
Hi.
And producer Alex is back on the buttons.
Yeah.
Not even my dog is in here to join us for this episode.
Wow. What are we paying him for?
I don't know. He's usually here to be the fan. The one download. All right. Well, let's see. Where do we start? The big news in marketing this week, well, it's been for the last 2 weeks, is the Pride Month marketing and marketers having no idea how to handle anything at all anymore.
All of a sudden, this very open, like, brand, like, allyship is just not working for a lot of brands right now.
So, background on this, if you haven't listened to all the episodes of the show, go back, start episode one. back in, was it April at this point? The Bud Light?
Yeah. Deal?
It was March or April. Since then, Bud Light has been down double digits every week, 27.7% the week of May 13th, the most recent week for which I have numbers. Since they did the Dylan Mulvaney influencer deal, it wasn't a spokesperson deal, it was an influencer deal. And if you don't know how influencer deals work in big brand world, it's usually like some 24-year-old is like, go get us some influencers, kid. And so they go to an agency and the agency gives them a bundle of influencers. And then it just goes out and everybody makes like $100, you know, something like that. But the brand manager for Bud Light, who's since left or been fired, who knows, sent a custom Bud Light can to Dylan Mulvaney, which set off the whole rampant exodus from Bud Light. And since then has begun spilling over into other brands. Most notably is Target, which started rolling out its Pride Month gear in like March. I'm right about that, right? I started seeing it in like March, April.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know about March, but definitely in April. And I kind of thought the same thing because I even had a second thought. I was like, wait, is it May or June is Pride Month? And then I was like, yeah. No, it's June. So
Target last week announced they didn't use specific details, but they said they're going to not have some merchandise and have other merchandise, which reliably has drawn the backlash of the LGBTQIA+ activist who say, no, you are not a real ally. Mm-hmm. You're fake. So that is the stand as things are going into Pride Month. So thoughts on Kirsten, what should, and by the way, I think our record on what should brands be doing in this case has been pretty good.
Yeah, we've been pretty on it, I'm not going to lie. I just want to add that, you know, a part of this is that, you know, Target moved a bunch of their Pride stuff, which used to be the first thing when you walk in. They always have a showcase of like a brand.
But I think the issue for them was they had kid stuff. And that's what was triggering people.
You know, okay. For some, and I'm looking for the answer on this. Every year they have had this stuff. Why was it so triggering this year? It's like,
environment. The issue's just more and more contentious.
I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. It just seems like it was like almost like the first time Target ever put Pride stuff out. And like, you would think this is the freak out over it. But I notice in my Target,
they've been doubling down on it year over year. In fact, Target has some like ongoing pride stuff where they'll like note on the shelves like this was designed by a gender non-binary curtain designer.
Yes, they do that. But I did notice in my Target that they move the pride stuff from being the first thing you see in the store to the back. And Alex goes to my Target, too. He knows what's up. It's back in the women's fitness stuff now.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I was like, actually thought it was really confusing when I walked that corner. But I read that, you know, a big problem with that was that Target said, hey, our employees are getting so harassed over this that they had to move it away because it was too close to the kids' stuff.
Yeah.
So they literally moved it to the most opposite side of the corner of at least my store. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't share any like walls with like the children's department.
Yeah. It, to me, what's going on here is pretty obvious. It'll like, by the way, all the analysts I've read and the analysis I've read in the marketing coverage is really bad. Like if you're a marketer and you're reading like eMarketer, you're reading or you're reading any of that, the analysis of the situation is so bad. Like if you could sue a media company for, if they were practicing professionally, they would probably be sued for some sort of malpractice.
Really?
Their misreading of the situation is completely awful. And like, you know, a lot of it is, even on the marketer side, like they're in full on political mode. They're not thinking about consumer mode. Like I have a eMarketer thing here that points out, it's like, there isn't evidence that viral conservative boycotts of consumer goods that are all effective. Countless similar incidents involving brands like Nike, Keurig, and more have gone viral, but were a blip in sales. The outrage machine is huge, and a wave of LGBT legislation across U.S. could leave brands confused. On the other hand, though, 7.2% of U.S. adults identify as LGBTQ+, per Gallup polling. Additionally, 34% of consumers say they're more likely to shop with brands that support LGBTQ+ causes. The obvious problem with that is if you are a mass market brand, 34% of people is not a mass market brand.
Yeah.
Great brand. If you had 34% of consumers, good brand, you're probably worth hundreds of millions of dollars. If you are Target, if you are Walmart, if you are Bud Light, if you're any of those brands and you're mass market, 34% does not get you there. You should not mess around with like trying to cater to a third of your consumers if it alienates another third of your consumers, which, by the way, I think the North Face one, have you seen the North Face one?
I have not.
So North Face, maybe they're just smarter. Like Nike, I think, is actually smart about this because Nike understands who their consumer is. They can get all the outrage, but then they don't lose any consumers because they know their core consumer. I think the North Face is the same thing. All of the, you know, yuppies on the front range of Colorado are going to double down on their North Face purchasing, and no one is really going to stop buying North Face because their core consumer is center left. So it really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But this is like tricking other brands into thinking they're the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like North Face is not a mass market brand. It's a style brand that sells to young people or people who are educated and high income.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the mistake that's being made here is not understanding what's happened, which is the rainbow flag, the pride narrative has always been kind of a blend of lifestyle and politics.
Right.
The politics has always been blended in it. Mm-hmm. What's happened in the last several years, really accelerating over the last year, is it is primarily seen as a political banner now. So for, let's call it, a third of your consumers in a mass market situation, they walk in and they don't just see the lifestyle stuff. Now they see the political banner, which may as well be a de facto Democratic Party political banner. Mm-hmm. So that is the problem these brands are running into that they haven't recognized, is the thing they see is used to be kind of lifestyle plus politics is now viewed overtly by 30 to 50% of Americans has directly and only political. That there's a political message, a political narrative, a political set of policy that comes along with it. And it is no longer just a, hey, call back to the gay rights movement 20 years ago. Hey, just leave us alone. We want equal rights, equal protection under the law. This is much more, includes a broader policy set that comes along with it, not just the leave us alone, we want to be the same.
Right.
So that's what's happened to the brands that they haven't figured out.
Yeah.
How would you get around that if you were Target? You do like an NRA setup in the sports section. Drop some don't tread on me flags and NRA flag.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's, you could roll out your 4th of July stuff to be a little more edgier. The don't tread on me shirts.
Oh, that's smart.
You could play that ball game. But, you know, just like Bud Light, we talked about, you can't play two courts at once. You kind of have to pick your side.
No, you can't, especially in this case where, like, reliably, like, the LGBTQIA plus movement understands the politics. They're not their groups are sophisticated politically.
Yeah.
So they know that, oh no, you can't back out. If you back out, we're going to punish you too. And so now you get a no-win situation.
I would, if I was Target, probably not even do a Pride collection. It would just be a year-round thing where I constantly am featuring like LGBTQ plus, like,
yeah,
artists, designers, cooks, and just like you said, you can identify it. Some places in Target have, like, this was created by, like, a Black artist or something like that. Just constantly always have that on the shelves just for just about all your products.
Yeah. Because then it's baseline.
Yeah.
It factors into the baseline. What gets you in trouble is when you deviate from the baseline.
Yeah.
You can kind of slow boil on the baseline too. You can amp it up a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, and be pretty overt about it. But I think you might be right. It's when you get like a quick swing in something.
And then you don't have to do a whole rollout and deal with the every year nonsense of people being like, I don't like that. Like,
yeah,
you just always have it in store. People either shop there or they won't. And then if people go, oh, Target doesn't support, Target goes, oh, yeah, we do. We carry this stuff year round.
And, well, I think you're right about that. I think the reason there's a push to do the bigger campaigns is because of the political element associated with it.
Yeah.
So objectively, what you would want from a social outcome, if you wanted complete equality, is like, it's not even noticeable. Being of any gender or non-gender or any sexual, you know, whether the L or the G, it would just be baseline. It would almost be unremarkable. Just be like, you may as well be straight, gay, whatever. You would want it as part of the baseline if that would be the ultimate social goal. What I think you're seeing is as the political narrative becomes more and more entrenched, being the baseline is not the social goal. Being, and this is every interest group in the country, you don't just want to be part of the group. You want to be treated as exceptional from the group for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You should be more equal. You should have more rights. You should have more government programs, more government spending aimed at you, preferential treatment. That is the goal fundamentally of every interest group. Every political group wants that. None of them just want to be baseline, even though that is what is the ultimate social good. So I think what you would see is if you did that, you wouldn't maybe arouse as much like pushback on the right, but you would still not make the left happy.
Sure. It's just a little too little.
Yeah.
Alex, do you have any thoughts on what you would do?
Make conservatives cry.
Which
just would, double down.
Which would be a good brand position if you were building a brand. If you are a mass market brand, you're going to be in trouble because if you're Target and you need to sell to, I don't know, 150 million people across the spectrum and you alienate a third of your consumers, like even the hardest core like Democrats going to be like, oh, I'm selling that stock. They're going to go short you because your sales are going to fall.
You don't think that the LGBTQ and people who just don't care will double down and like maybe people will switch going to other grocery stores and start going to Target? And then, I don't know, like Costco becomes like middle of the line conservatives, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Target just becomes a safe place for people who.
So it's possible, right? That is a possible outcome. The issue you would run into is if it was your job, would you bet your career on it?
No.
Because the counter argument to that would be like, yeah, we'll get a nominal bump for some time. But if we tell a third of our consumers to screw off, they will always remember we told them to screw off and not come back. The consumers that we made happy may be like marginally less loyal, but they were probably already like in our court anyway. So how much can we overcome? Will they spend effectively double with us is what you'd have to do if you shaved off a third. You need your other third to spend double, and the people who don't care, say the middle third, would spend the same.
The only thing I see is that the people who are speaking out against their partnerships and like having meltdowns in Targets, is that really the clientele you want? Like people who are getting overly emotional on things that don't really affect them?
That's Walmart crowd.
I don't know.
No offense. I do shop at Walmart too.
So what you're going to get into there is this is where the question. So has a like having worked in politics for a lot of my career, that is what we would do. That would be the political thinking on it. We double down on the message. We'd peel away the people who are, in fact, we would get double the support for making other people mad. We would raise money off of it. It would be great. Mm-hmm. Once we win the campaign, we shut everything down. We don't need anything long term. From the marketing perspective, sure, maybe you don't want like the handful of people who have meltdowns in Target. But what you find is, yeah, there's those people, but then there's the other, say, 500 people that come into your store that aren't going to say anything. Because they're not going to make a big deal out about it. Oh, this, because by the way, in the narrative that eMarketer says is, oh, people prefer to shop with stores that promote their values. So it's about 60% of people say they want to shop with stores or brands that promote their values. So you're picking like that like promotes their values side, like splits the baby pretty hard. Yeah. Because the conservatives are also going to shop with brands that support their values.
Yeah.
But like I think you're right. I think the future of the economy is that. I think the future of the economy is a red economy, blue economy. Like, you know, one side doubles down and says, like, we don't want the racist transphobes here. The other side doubles down and says, you know, we don't want the woke commies here. And you end up with essentially two economies operating parallel to one another.
That's going to be wild.
But that is going to let a lot more business, is going to let some businesses rise, but it'll tank a Target. Target is a business, Bud Light is a business, doesn't work without a third of its market share. Mm-hmm. And the argument might be maybe like mass market products don't make sense. Maybe mass market products made sense for like a short period of time in history, but don't actually make sense most of the time. Hmm. But like, I think your play is like North Face. That is the obvious play for North Face, right? Yeah. That's what you do. REI, obvious play for REI. Brands like that, Nike, 100%. It's the brands that have to have, you know, 80% market share, 90% market share to function where they get into trouble.
Can I please tell my favorite Target story of all time?
Yes.
The time, this started my whole Target quotes book, when I was standing in the pasta aisle and there were two college kids in there and this kid went, oh my God, they have gay macaroni, and picked up a rainbow colored Kraft mac and cheese box. and he said it so happily. And I was like, and I am starting my list of Target quotes.
Gay macaroni. That's a great title for a book too.
oh my God, they have gay macaroni. I had to walk away. I was like, gonna laugh so hard. He was so happy. I think it just was a unicorn on it too, because I went back to check it out. Anyway.
Yeah, but the other thing with Target is they do have a little better insulation than Bud Light. Bud Light is so easy to sub out of.
Oh, yeah.
Target's a little tougher to sub out of. Product selection, location, harder. So for them, probably what they should have done is just quietly move the stuff to another part of the store.
Which is what they kind of did.
No, they made an announcement about it.
Okay.
They should have just very quietly done it, gotten through the month, let people forget about it, and then keep it in another part of the store from years on.
And then roll out the school supply stuff.
And then roll out the school supply stuff. And then the Halloween stuff.
Yep, exactly. Then Christmas.
But back to the issue that brands are dealing with is not understanding that they're not talking to consumers when they roll that out. Like, they are activating the political coding in the consumer's mind when they do that. The pride stuff, the rainbow flag, essentially any discussion of trans at this point doesn't encode for necessarily like lifestyle, social issue. It now encodes for politics in a very direct way.
Yeah.
Same way guns do.
No, yeah.
Target doesn't sell guns. So.
And neither does Walmart, I think, anymore.
They sell certain types still, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
But that's the update in the Pride Month stuff.
You know, also,
I think Bud Light will be the only casualty, by the way. I think Target is
Target will live.
Sub out of.
I went to get that kitten I found some toys, and there were no cat toys but the Pride cat toys. So my cat has all these little Pride toys. It's just kind of funny. I don't know. There was no like normal.
Your cat could probably be famous on TikTok right now.
Well, I'm trying to get her there.
She needs a TikTok.
She's on my TikTok.
Oh, well, you're on your TikTok. You can't share a TikTok, can you?
I guess not.
So flipping to the other side of things, want to talk about the DeSantis announcement?
Oh boy, do I want to talk about this? Well, it was a bold...
Well, you got to give the background.
Ron DeSantis is running for president in 2024. He announced his campaign in a very unique style. He announced that he would partner with Elon Musk and his Twitter Spaces to do the announcement there. And
then, depending on who you believe, either Ron DeSantis broke the internet or Twitter is a cluster.
Yo, my oh my. There are a lot of ways the story could go. You could say that there is no earthly way that Twitter could have possibly stress tested those servers for that response, which, you know, every news network and everyone is reporting a completely different number on how many people actually tuned in. I don't think we'll actually ever have a solid number, but it was a lot. It was a lot to the fact that it broke Twitter or melted the servers. Either Twitter wasn't ready for it, or the internet wasn't ready for it, or the response was too good, or the response was not good enough.
I think the numbers are impressive, delay or no delay.
You know, I saw some places saying, oh, he only had 300,000 people listening. I said, well, yeah, like maybe one point. But I remember there was a point where there was like 600,000 people.
The timeline was when they were trying to get up on Elon's Twitter, they had like 600,000 something people. What they had to do is change to host it from the other host, David Sacks' Twitter. Mm-hmm. And then that's when they kind of stabilized in the 300 range. But you're right. That is a concurrent count. That doesn't count all the people who came in, left, and sure. Also doesn't count views after.
Yeah.
Because it continues to accrue views. So, you know, live like that wouldn't surprise me if total views at this point were 3 to 4 million.
Oh, God, yeah.
But let's not forget that Fortnite Travis Scott concert had 12.3 million players stream in.
Was that on Twitch?
No, it was on Fortnite.
Oh, yeah. It was just on Fortnite. Oh.
Yeah. And like, when you get into that, like, you can never, no matter how big politics seems, it's never even in the same ballpark as entertainment. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Never, ever even close. It gets a lot of buzz and attention because people like to talk about it, but it never even comes close to entertainment.
Every night that Taylor Swift does an Eras Tour, there's like 4 or 5 streams on TikTok with like 20 to 50, 60K people watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane.
It is. I think that's absolutely nuts. But
so DeSantis, more popular than the average cable news show.
True.
Less popular than Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Which is about what I would market. Yeah.
Most politicians are on there.
Most politicians, yeah.
A lot of people are saying that that launch was not good and a really bad way to kick things off. What do you think?
So you and I identified this when we heard it, like, oh God, that's going to be a problem, because you and I have done enough live streams that you know how finicky they are.
Yeah.
And on a new product like that, you just knew it wasn't going to work cleanly. And it didn't. So I would say that means it went poorly because that became part of the story.
Yeah.
But there's a meta part of the narrative that is easy to overlook, which explains a lot of the negative media coverage. And it's this: he did not announce using any of the major corporate media. Mm-hmm. He didn't go to Fox News. He didn't hold a big press conference. He didn't interview with the New York Times. He didn't do an interview with the Wall Street Journal. He went direct. He cut out the middlemen, which is overtly a threat to their business model.
Yes.
You know, look, I'd argue most media just kind of reports what they see on Twitter anyway, so what's the difference? But he didn't give the TV cable news networks any video. Mm-hmm. There's no video from that that they could play. And he did it with numbers that are probably well in excess of what they could have generated.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, your average, I think, prime time, I think the Tucker numbers where he was doing like couple million a night. Somebody can check me on that. But it, you know, for most like cable news, like a million person audience in the evening is big.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. So the meta thing that he did was be like, I don't need the media to scale my message.
Right.
Which imbued like double negative coverage.
How is that going to shape this next presidential run for everybody? Is there going to be a trend of that? You think that?
No, because the media is largely a Democratic constituency. Mm-hmm. So whoever the Democratic nominee is, assuming that's Joe Biden, will do everything through the media because it'll be relatively friendly,
right,
for the most part. And leveraged. And then just like you've seen the last several years, the candidates who are, you know, off to the side and competing will try to use social media and podcast interviews and YouTube and Rumble.
So like, let's just look at like the Republican primary. Like, we're not going to like, we're just going to look at who's going to get that ticket. Do you think that could shape that election?
I think. So let's say the only thing that matters in the Republican primary as far as mainstream media goes is Fox News. I think Fox News is less influential now than it's ever been.
Yes.
This may be the last election that it's actually influential.
Mm-hmm.
So to the degree Fox News plays heavily for one person, I guess it could matter.
Yeah. I think it's going to play a huge role, and I don't even want to like get off topic, but like the deep fakes we've already been seeing,
hilarious,
are insane. Like,
hilarious.
This election is going to be so different and chaotic than from anything I think we could ever like think of or experience before. The deep fakes that are just getting pumped out by the meme machine people, I mean, that's just like a dude in his house.
So
just,
there's one where it's like a Michael Scott scene from The Office where he's wearing a women's suit, but it's Ron DeSantis's voice saying all the lines.
And that's coming out from like the Trump party, like Trump party
campaign.
The campaign. Yes. It might be.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that is going to be weaponized is going to be scary. And I won't be surprised if there's some sort of like law or regulation that's going to end up going into effect because of this.
Yeah, that's probably a conversation for another time.
Yeah, but I don't want to get on it.
What I see in this is, you know, we're already back into where all the marketing stuff is political stuff.
Yeah.
De facto. Nobody can just sell things anymore. All right, we have to wrap up. So why can't I talk? I do the same thing every week. If you like what you heard, please leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this has been the Of Record Podcast. Of Record is hosted by me, Joe Clements, with the assistance of producer Alex Reinhard. Of Record is produced at the Trailway Studio in Tallahassee, Florida. This episode was edited by producer Alex Reinhard. Our theme music is composed and performed by Rob Gokey. Special thanks to our entire team here at SDS. You can see more information about the show on our website, podcastofrecord.com. As always, we'd appreciate your reviews and ratings in your podcast app of choice. These ratings and reviews help more people discover the show, which helps us keep delivering quality content each week. Thanks for listening.